Congress and People's Democratic Party. Both the parties are largely fighting the elections for restoration of Kashmir's statehood and semi-autonomy. Ever since New Delhi abolished Kashmir's special status, Mehdi has been strongly opposing the move, calling it undemocratic and unconstitutional.
For this election is being contested to convey the message to Parliament and through Parliament the entire nation of India that the decisions that were taken on August 5, 2019 were taken against the will and the wishes of the people of Kashmir, and all the constitutional norms were violated. We want our dignity to be returned, our democratic rights to be returned, and constitutional status to be restored.
Like Mehdi, his opponent, People's Democratic Party's candidate, and yet another energetic and young political figure, Wahidur Rahman Para, wants people to vote to convey a message to New Delhi that people of Kashmir are not happy.
I think this election is in Kashmir is about hope. People should feel that they are entitled to their rights, so that, you know, whatever has been snatched from us, from our rights to constitution, to democracy, to civil liberties, so that we reclaim that space. The only way to restore everything that we lost is through vote, through electoral participation.
Pertinently, Kashmir has been without an elected government for the last 5 years. Para sees India's general elections as an opportunity to break what he calls the cycle of silence in Kashmir.
Srinagar parliamentary segment has historically witnessed abysmal voter turnout. But with Mehdi and Para in the fray, the political observers believe the contest will be very tight. And this time around, the turnout is expected to be unprecedented. Sayyidari Safi, Indian administered Kashmir.
Iran's annual business matching fair underway in Tehran. Over 2,000 investors and business people from 120 countries are making the best of the opportunities provided by the 6th exhibition of Iran's export potentials, also called Iran Expo 2024.
I am grateful for the opportunity to learn more about the Islamic Republic of Iran and the potential for joint business projects. I hope that we can find ways to expand their business and trade relations.
The international event has seen a surge in the number of participants compared to the previous years, as it upholds the slogan of the year, Surge in Production Through People's Participation. And in line with that slogan, Iran's free trade zones are offering investment incentives for foreign venture capitalists and entrepreneurs.
We offer great investment opportunities, and I wouldn't be exaggerating to say that Chabahar is considered a haven for investors, as they are exempt from routine taxation and other customary charges. This will significantly reduce production expenses and the final price, and therefore increases profit. There are also other incentives for foreign investors, which is why I suggest they pay us a visit.
Iran has 6 free trade zones and 16 special economic zones specifically set up to support economic activities and facilitate international trade relations and offer attractive guarantees and protections to foreign investors.
According to the most recent evaluation of free trade zones in Iran, Aras has received the highest score in all categories. We've been able to increase production and sign new investment contracts with foreign businesses, and we are planning to offer even more incentives to those who wish to do business with us.
Iran Expo 2024 is the largest and most important commercial event in the country. It kicked off on April 27th with companies showcasing their latest products and services in different sectors, including industry, agriculture, tourism, and medical equipment.
The week-long event is a great opportunity for investors and business people to familiarize themselves with Iran's potentials in different economic sectors. Yusuf Shahmadi, Tehran.
In a resounding display of solidarity, thousands of people congregated near the Pakistani capital Islamabad as the foundation of the Al-Aqsa Museum was ceremoniously laid. This museum is designed to highlight the historical and religious significance of Palestine, aiming to illuminate these facts on a global scale, while also addressing the injustices and hardships faced by Palestinians due to Israeli oppression. The Al-Aqsa Mosque holds deep significance for Muslims worldwide, serving as one of the holiest sites in Islam.
This event basically reflects the need of unity in the Muslim Ummah. That is the uttermost requirement for the Muslim nation. This is the time that Muslims should unite all over the world, irrespective of their small faith differences. And this project here today is reflecting about the need of unity in the entire Muslim Ummah.
People from diverse backgrounds gathered at the site to witness the occasion and express their support for the Palestinian cause.
This is the time that the Palestinian kids, Palestinian people are calling us. And we need to speak out. We need to do something practical for them, because if this time we do not unite, then there will be no other time.
Speakers at the event underscored the urgent need for unity and action to address the plight of oppressed Palestinians during this genocide against them.
Very, very terrible what's happening at the moment, but at the end of the day, I think it comes down to people. It doesn't matter what your background is or, you know, where you come from. At the end of the day, people need to be in touch with people. We all need to care. We all need to support each other. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing.
The event, held amid fervent calls for peace and justice, saw a united front against Israel's ongoing onslaught in the besieged territory.
People here in Pakistan are raising their voices in opposition to the United States and Israel, calling for an end to the latter's genocidal war in Gaza and an immediate ceasefire in the besieged territory. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrians have been living in harsh economic conditions for years due to the post-war circumstances. Prices of essential goods like fuel, medicines, bread and overall goods supplies have seen a soaring trend because of the Western sanctions and over 13 years of war that terrorists waged upon them. Washington has recently passed new sanctions to increase pressure on Damascus by further crippling vital economic sectors, deepening the crisis and starving the Syrian people.
The U.S. and Western countries need a pretext to continue their economic war after their military invasion to overthrow the Syrian state failed. This new act will certainly affect Syrians, but we will continue to defy the United States, which is also targeting Iran, Russia, China, and other countries. Our defiance will lead to Washington's isolation and international failure.
The Captagon to Act was passed under the pretext of fighting Narcos, oblivious to the fact that the Syrian government was among the initiators of an Arab and regional alliance to combat this issue.
All the pretexts used by the United States in this regard are invalid and legally unsubstantiated. The Syrian government has repeatedly affirmed its readiness to cooperate within a comprehensive international framework to combat the scourge of narcotics and drug trafficking.
The new sanctions leveled against Syria coincide with those imposed on Tehran in the wake of Iran's retaliatory attack on the occupied territories. Some analysts believe these sanctions aim to protect the Israeli regime by distracting the resistance axis countries from their operations in support of Palestine.
This blind Western strategy is also used against countries like Iran and Russia, especially after their military superiority was demonstrated in Ukraine and recently in the Iranian retaliatory strike against the Zionist entity. But these countries have developed ways to overcome the Western sanctions.
The sanctions have embedded the return of displaced Syrians, significantly hindered construction projects in the country, and pushed most Syrians below the poverty line, only due to their commitment to resistance and rejection of normalization with the Israeli regime.
Economic sanctions may serve as a pressure tactic, but they cannot alter the political course, especially when imposed on countries like Syria and Iran, or resistance movements that are ready to make any sacrifices for their causes. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The U.S. is for the aggression against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip has claimed almost 35,000 lives. The million or so Palestinians who are camped out in Rafah are on the edge. As Israel warns, with or without a ceasefire deal, the invasion is going to take place. Meanwhile, pro-Palestine U.S. university protests have taken a turn for the worse. As passions for Palestinians has reached boiling point amongst the protesters, so have the police's heavy-handed tactics. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at different aspects of this aggression, including U.S. complicity. First, let me introduce our guests. Jihad Abdulmalik is a former member of the Black Panther Party who joins us from Stone Mountain, Georgia. Also joining us, Julia Kassab, journalist and political analyst from Beirut. All right, Jihad, I'm going to start with you first. Welcome to you both. And I need to touch on this because it's such a grim and shocking figure. Daily, we are being shocked through the past 7 months, and that's the death toll nearing 35,000. The ratio still stands, mostly women and children at the 70% mark, and percentage, and 30% the rest. The question comes about is, you know, throughout all the trials and tribulations and the ceasefire talks right now, for example, why does Israel continue its genocide at such an alarming and accelerated speed, nonstop?
Right. Yes, indeed. Well, thank you very much. And I always begin with, in the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful, alhamdulillah, all praise be to Allah. Yeah, this is the whole Zionism is the tip of the spear of imperialism at this point in time in our history. And the United States is definitely an imperialist country. It's exploited its imperialist aggression throughout the world, the African continent, Latin America, South America, through its NATO expansions, the war in Ukraine, all these type of things. But what's happening now is that on October the 7th, Hamas was able to crack through that normalcy of Zionist aggression, that normalcy of the ongoing genocide that's really been taking place since 1948, actually as far as occupied Palestine is concerned. So now you're seeing the rabid, aggressive response, and there's no stop. And so we are looking at the demonstrations increasing in the United States. This is what needs to really happen, because really this is all about imperialism. That is the overall context, world domination. And the tip of that spear right now in this present day and time is Zionism. And here in the United States, we know that the underlying foundation of that is white supremacy. And people on the news, they don't use those terminologies, but if you say Zionist to a person on the streets in America, they may not be really sure. Anti-Semitic, they're throwing all these words at you, but they know what white supremacy is. We know about that for the last 400 years, and we know how it manifests itself. We know that, once again, the same mentality that's hanged people from trees, castrated them, threw them at the bottom of the lake, put them in abject slavery, the worst kind in human history, and disassociated us with our religion, our language, our culture, every last aspect of life. No feeling and emotion about it at all. Mm-hmm. It's the same mentality that you see that Zionists going after our sisters and brothers in Gaza. It is the same demented satanic mentality. So it's nothing new. It's just that imperialism is under attack.
Okay.
It's under attack, and it's responding in a very virulent type of way. And that's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of,
sure,
of imperialism as it always existed. So it's nothing new that's going on right now.
Well,
expected to continue.
Sure, but they're coming under attack, and we're seeing that in the form of the protests, right, Julia Qassam? I want to get that in a little bit later. But these protests, one of the things that I think it is pretty significant is the fact that right now you're seeing that generational divide really show itself. These protesters are very well informed, and they are not going to follow the line that the previous generation did, which is maybe some of the senators and lawmakers from some of these Ivy League universities maybe in those positions in government right now. What do you think? Do you think that these student protests are something that is passive and it's going to fizzle out, or are we really looking at a serious movement here until they get some of the demands that they have, which I believe three of them are the core ones?
Usually in the U.S. context, from the last few waves of protests that we've seen, which are the culmination of people's dissatisfaction and people's outrage with the internal dynamics, the domestic dynamics of U.S. imperialist and U.S. capitalist aggression, it's culminated to a point where the U.S. monster that has aided, funded, and abetted the genocide in Gaza has been so blatant and been a source of such moral outrage, especially to the young generation that has not been as indoctrinated in Zionist propaganda that the older generations have been in the U.S. It's really fueled this outrage and this discontentment, and we now the question as to whether they will fizzle out or continue to grow and sustain depends on if the protesters, you know, maintain organizational discipline, but also branch out beyond the universities and expand into mobilizing the communities around them into a kind of a greater mobilization, a greater sustained effort and movement against the U.S. Support for this genocide in Gaza, which is where our focus as spectators in this movement and as spectators in the events that unfold before us should be. All our focus should be on Gaza and should be in speaking out and stopping this genocide in a material dimension, as well as in a political, as we make a political and moral stance as well. So right now, the students' demands kind of are maintained on that material line of from their nexus, pressuring their universities to stop divestments from the Zionist entity, to seeing as their institutions essentially function just as investment banks for the maintenance of U.S. imperialist interests. In this case, the Zionist entity being a core part of that. So as we can see, the U.S. Demonstrators have been very unwavering in the concession and in the attempts at reaching some kind of a symbolic concession from their administrations, you know, such as the creation of fake and symbolic alternative bodies, which is some of the proposals we've seen coming out of some of these universities, to quote-unquote investigate, you know, investments by the university. But of course, the protesters aren't buying that. And we've seen a continuation in some of the universities, such as the California Polytechnic University of Humboldt, where people say half of the demonstrators are, half of the students sleep in their cars.
Right.
This is an example of one of the poor and not so elite universities. Radical, you know, tactics and pushback. And just as you see the war of attrition kind of play out on the front in Lebanon and on the front in Gaza,
right,
against these highly trained, highly funded armies, the students also have been, you know, in standoffs of attrition against the highly militarized U.S. police, just by organizing themselves by the masses on their campuses against these highly trained armies that are responding with extreme brutality, thereby also exposing another dimension of U.S. Hypocrisy.
The level of brutality is quite extreme when it comes to these protests, but the disconnect is glaringly showing itself, and I'd like to continue a little bit with that with you, if I may, Jihad. And that, I'm going to give an example of just one of the many where you can see that the politicians, forget the security or police, but the politicians or the ones in charge are just the disconnected from what was happening there in the Gaza Strip. And I want to mention this Hamilton Hall in Colombia, where it was renamed Hind Hall after the six-year-old that was killed, that was calling for help in the ambulance in the Gaza Strip. And, you know, the regime forces came in and they killed the members of the ambulance, which included her. Her voice was splashed all over the net, especially on social media platforms. And so you have these protesters that went and renamed this hall, but the way the news portrayed it was they took over the hall, and they made it look like it was a violent act. But they don't even know who Hind is, who this six-year-old was. So we're looking at this divide, which shows that the politicians need to get in gear with this. They need to go lock and step with it. But I don't think they are there at all. They're very far. How much does that contribute to the way that the students have been acting out?
Right. Very good. So very good question there, my brother. So it's drawing a red line in the sand. This contradiction here is everybody has to take a side now. So the duopoly of the Republican and Democratic Party, you know, where the rich run for president, talk about the national elections primarily, you know, now they have a dilemma here, because these, particularly the Ivy League schools, middle class, upper class students, or protesting, these students would normally be the ones that is groomed to handle and manage to take over the capitalist and imperialist society as it is to keep that normalcy there. Now the ones that they're groomed, their children are rebelling against us. And so now this is very disconcerting for the ruling class here in the United States. It's showing us, all of us, United States citizens, you know, where our government really stands, you know, and so now it is up to the people to change that. And it has to be a fundamental change. This is this imperialist aggression of the United States, the normalcy of oppression, is ruining the planet. It's not just Gaza, which is intensely horrendous. insidious and wicked. And all, but it's the planet. You're destroying the planet. You're destroying everything. Medical care, yes. Cost of living, all over the place. Now, see, everything is coming to a height right now. So it's good. I'm saying that it's good that this contradiction is being exposed for what it is, so it doesn't have to be packaged and wrapped up real nice, that the government is really supporting the people. It has not supported the American people. What it does is it supports the U.S. Status quo and the class divided society that we live in. So this contradiction is good, my brother. What we need to do is the labor unions of the community organizations, leftist organizations, revolutionary organizations in the United States need to get behind these students. We need to have the walkouts in the high schools, not just in the universities. We need to bring this thing down. That's what we have to do, and heighten the contradiction, not try to mellow it out. The politicians don't want to support it. Okay. One day they'll be gone, too. We need to develop another sense of self-determination here in the United States, and that's what you see happening, and you're seeing the virulent, aggressive, rabid dog response from police that doesn't even know how to spell their own name.
Right, indeed. Well, Julie Kassem, our guest there talks about how things are coming to a head, and that's a good thing. We're looking at a situation in Rafah where that is seems like it's going to be what the Prime Minister Netanyahu wanted from the get-go anyways, which is an invasion of Rafah. This is intertwined with the ceasefire talks, and I'm not too sure what you think of those talks in the first place, but it doesn't look good. Netanyahu came out and said, we're going to go ahead with or without one anyways. If that happens, what do you think, based on what our guest there said, what is going to happen there? I mean, you know, there's so many red lines that have been crossed, but if that goes ahead and predictions are that there's going to be so many deaths, that do you think that's just going to be the breaking point there where the world is going to really react and we're going to see things that maybe we haven't seen? What do you think if that Rafah invasion takes place?
So both the Zionist entity and the U.S. imperialist regime want a safe base here, and that comes into a culmination in Rafah. You know, talk about contradictions here. The U.S. wants the safe base by trying to appear like it's putting some pressure on a diplomatic solution, both in the negotiations and in trying to de-escalate the Zionist inclination to increase its aggression on Rafah and to go forth with this deadly invasion of the last city that it says it hasn't invaded yet. And the U.S. basically, while it's continuing to basically treat Israel's war crimes with complete impunity, the Zionist entity is basically taking advantage of that aspect in saying that, despite all of its failures in Gaza, it still says that it wants to, whether an agreement has been reached or not, continue on into its invasion into Rafah. As we can see in the last few days, despite U.S. Pressure to at least appear like it's pressuring the Zionist entity to protect civilians in its incursion, the entity is continuing to slaughter civilians. The last few days, we've seen videos come out of dead and injured children from its bombings on homes in Rafah and in the vicinity of the border city. Blinken was just telling Israel that the U.S. can't support this unless there is a clear plan to protect civilians. Of course, that's a disingenuous statement. The U.S.'s foreign policy is built on blood, as we know. But, of course, this also comes at the helm of the Zionist entity's complete failure to achieve any of its objectives, not just in Rafah, but in all of Gaza. And just this face-saving invasion cannot salvage it, and the U.S. knows that. As the Zionist entity is provoking in Rafah, it's also, Halevi just also said that they're prepared to attack Lebanon as well. So this is just a long continuation of, the Zionist entity continuing on its bravado, wanting to expand this war and pull the U.S. with it, as long as Netanyahu can continue to buy time away from jail, as well as other top Zionist officials. And that aspect in itself, I think, would heighten the contradictions between the U.S., which is trying to save face in presenting itself as the humanitarian broker here, and the Zionist entity, which is trying to save face in trying to pretend like it's achieved any objective in either, quote-unquote, defeating Hamas, which it hasn't even come close in affecting them, or in recovering any of its captives, which is it's shown it doesn't really care to take seriously as well.
Right.
So that in itself is presented a big contradiction in the public opinion of Israeli settler society and of U.S. society as well, as exemplified by the unrest there.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Jihad, because when you think of the genocide taking place in the Gaza Strip, of course, everybody is going to think of the first face to be Netanyahu. But what is inseparable from this, and maybe even should be highlighted more, is the U.S. role of how the U.S. is assisting, not only militarily, but you know, when you have Antony Blinken making his rounds to Jordan or to Israel or to Qatar and here and there, we know that if it wasn't for the U.S., this war it couldn't continue. It's just technically it's not feasible or not it's not possible. What role is the U.S. playing right now? What is it that it's doing, in your eyes, not only in terms of the complicity, but what does it want to achieve using Israel to do what it's doing in the Gaza Strip in terms of the genocide that's taking place?
Exactly. Very good question again, my brother. Well, you know, as President Joe Biden says clearly, unabashed, unapologetically, that's why we can't be apologetic about our strategy now and our determination. He'll tell the American public and the whole world that he is a Zionist. And Zionist is white racism. It has nothing to do with the Judaic faith, problem of Muslim. Prophet Moses is beloved by all Muslims. Reading the Quran, his name is mentioned more than the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the Quran himself. You know, so that's the rules, anti-Semitic. The United States is trying to maintain its hegemony over the world. Either the war in Ukraine, supporting the war in Ukraine, expansion of NATO, gutting out the continent of Africa. Look what it has done. Look what the Central Intelligence Agency has done. Gutted out Africa. Gutted out Latin America. Caused a disruption through assassination and exploitation and extrapolation of the resource off the whole continent of Africa. So this is, the United States has its own agenda. Like Joe Biden, the president, said, if there was no Israel, the United States would have created an Israel. They are telling us exactly what they're doing. They're unpolished. All you have to do is look at it and see what it is. And so what's happening, just a couple of bullet points, my brother, is that I'm going to express our love and support for the brothers and sisters in Gaza and Palestine. I should have said that in the very beginning, our love and support for you. You know, we want to increase the student demonstration, not only on college campuses, but in high schools. We want to connect the student demonstrations with the labor unions and the protests here to combat the growing fascism, the cop cities, which is connected with the Israel Defense Forces right here in the United States. We have to break that, and it's going to take serious struggle and sacrifice to do that. We know it's painful. We know people are dying. That is the nature of revolutionary struggle. We're not blinded by that. We recognize that we're building up a sense of resistance here in the United States, and we know that a lot of what's going to have to happen is going to have to happen by the movements inside the United States to break the control of the United States government over the rest of the world.
Okay.
Otherwise, other countries will be like throwing spaghetti at the wall. We have to do that. We have to be our own liberators for the sake of everybody, every human being on this planet. So I'm asking our movements to join together even more so, you know, to break this thing. But we need to broaden that contradiction. We can't try to bring it. We're not just a ceasefire. We need a cease occupation. Ceasefire, okay, yeah, we want you to stop killing everybody. Cease the occupation. The United States government is not going to do that on their own court. Blinken is not there on any goodwill mission. There's no humanitarianism about it at all. There's always subterfuge, deceit, and deception involved in every last thing that this government has done since its very existence.
Well, we're looking, and this will be the last question, Julie Kassem, at the possibility, as you said, of maybe Israel attacking Lebanon, though they're involved militarily more or less on a daily basis. Are we looking at Rafah being that the point where there may be then a full-fledged war between the Israeli regime and Lebanon that may drag other countries into that?
Yeah, so with the Zionist entity saying that they are going to continue on their invasion into Rafah, you know, no matter what, it seems like after 7 months of the Zionist entity wanting to, you know, attack Lebanon, increase its aggression against Lebanon, they're going to want to forcefully drag the U.S. into backing that. The U.S. is adamantly against that since October due to the strength of the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon and the desire for the Zionist entity to turn its guns on to Lebanon has only grown since Hezbollah has successfully desecuritized the border of Lebanon and occupied Palestine, you know, destroyed a lot of the Zionist military and intelligence infrastructure, all the way to the Mount Jarmak Maron base, which controls a lot of the air operations and air surveillance in our whole region in the north of occupied Palestine. At least 100,000 settlers from the north have been evacuated. So Israel wants to recover what it's lost there, the unrecoverable losses that have severely weakened its control on its occupation in the entity, especially in the north. So this is just a more every bit of an objective, as Gaza is for the Zionist entity. Lebanon is as well. So, of course, coupled with the aspect of the current Zionist administration and Netanyahu wanting to prolong this war as long as he can, it's almost inevitable that this is next in line for the Zionist entity, is to turn its aggression and to turn its aggression and attention more on Lebanon. Of course, can see that Gaza was a miserable failure for the occupation, but they're going to, that's only going to increase their stubbornness in wanting to save face in the north, which is going to be even more of a blowback.
Thank you for that. Thank you so much, Julie Kassam, journalist, political analyst. And Jihad Abdul-Mohamed, thank you, former member Black Panther Party, Stone Mountain, Georgia. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tawai and the team, it's goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we started explanation of Surah Muddathir, the 74th in order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 56 ayahs and was revealed in Mecca as commandment for public proclamation of the message of monotheism without fear of the ringleaders of the pagan Arabs who were conspiring against the Prophet's secret preaching of Islam. It opens by addressing the Prophet as Muddathir, or the one wrapped in a mantle. It warns the obstinate disbelievers of their faith on the Day of Judgment, and a specific opponent of the Prophet is singled out in Ayah 11. Towards its end, the surah exposes the foolishness of the disbelievers' attitude to divine revelation and the Day of Resurrection. It is narrated from the Prophet's 15th infallible heir, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, that whoever recites Surah Muddathir in the obligatory ritual prayers shall be elevated to accompany the Prophet and will be immune from the misfortune in this worldly life, provided he or she pays precise attention to its contents and acts upon them. We continue from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20.
ثم يطمع أن أزيد كلا إنه كان لآياتنا عنيدا سأرهقه صعودا إنه فكر وقدر فقتل كيف قدر.
Still he is eager that I should give him more. No, indeed, he is an obstinate opponent of our signs. Soon I will overwhelm him with hardship. Indeed, he reflected and decided. Perish he! How he decided! Again, perish he! How he decided! If you might recall, in our previous episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, we explained the divine condemnation of Walid ibn Mughayre, who was one of the avowed rejecters of Islam, a sworn enemy of the Prophet, and a thanklessly avaricious mischief maker, in spite of the fact that he had been granted wealth, health, children, and social prestige by the Almighty Creator. He used to call the Prophet of Islam a magician and discouraged people from hearing the recitation of the Noble Quran. A pagan to his very core, in the end, he died in utter misery, disgrace, and poverty, witnessing against his wishes the acceptance of Islam by three of his sons. Such types of obstinate deniers of truth are found in every age, and we should be cautious of their mischief. The ayahs that we recited to you now are divine condemnation of Walid ibn Mughayre and his negative characteristics that made him crave for more wealth. Here, God Almighty seals his fate by warning of the hardship to afflict him because of his mockery of divine signs and his gathering of pagans to devise sinister plots against the Prophet. The ayahs point out that, as the principal evil brain, he used to reflect on his satanic inclinations and decide what blasphemous words should be used against the Prophet. For such devilish decisions, the divine wrath of perish for him resounds in ayahs 19 and 20. From these ayahs, we learn that, number 1, greed and thanklessness brings about the downfall of the wealthy. Number 2, the obstinate pagan Walid ibn Mughayrah is cited as an example of the negative nature of those whose thirst for wealth never quenches even if the entire world happens to fall to their share. Number 3. A faithless person, even if smart and proud of the sharpness of his mind to devise devilish plans against truth and the believers, never succeeds. And number 4. Imprecation towards the vowed enemies of faith and pronouncing curse upon them are necessary in order to expose their blasphemous designs. Now let us listen to ayahs 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25 of the same surah.
ثم قتل كيف قدر ثم نظر ثم عبس وبسر ثم أدبر واستكبر فقال إن هذا إلا سحر يؤثر.
Then he looked, then he frowned and scowled. Then he went away disdainfully, saying, "It is nothing but magic handed down. It is nothing but the speech of a human being." These ayahs continue to focus on the crafty pagan Walid ibn Mughayrah, who, despite knowing the flawless wisdom of the Noble Quran, refused to accept the truth. And after thinking in his devilish mind how to reject it, he disdainfully called it the magical words of a mere human being. He tried to unify the pagans of Mecca against Islam, but having failed in his designs, he frowned, scowled, and accused the Prophet's preaching of monotheism and virtue to guide the people towards God Almighty, as bewitching words that lead to separation between men and women, masters and slaves, and parents and children. These ayahs teach us that, number 1, we should not be negligent of the plots and stratagems of the enemies of Islam, because their devilish brains are always planning against truth and how to harm believers. Number 2, the obstinate disbelievers arrogantly consider themselves as superior and rightful, while depriving others of their rights. And number 3, the flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran makes the obstinate disbelievers speechless, and that's why they call it as magic. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30 of Surah Muddassir.
إن هذا إلا قول البشر سأصليك سقر وما أدراك ما سقر لا تبقي ولا تذر لواحة للبشر عليها 19.
Soon I shall cast him into Sagar, and what will show you what is Sagar? It neither spares nor leaves anything. It burns the skin. There are 19 keepers over it. The Arabic word Sagar refers to the most scorching and lowest part of hell, where obstinate disbelievers like Walid ibn Mughirah, who never stopped their devilish designs to try to insult the Prophet, distort truth, and prevent people from accepting Islam, will be thrown. The fire in Sagar burns not just the skin, but the entire body, including the soul. The terrible torment of hellfire neither takes the life of the condemned persons, nor does it keep them alive, but they are entangled all the time in a state between life and death. Elsewhere, the Noble Quran has mentioned that whenever the body of the inmates of hell burns, new skin and flesh grows to burn again, and this torment continues all the time. As Ayah 30 says, there are 19 angels of divine wrath keeping constant watch over the disbelievers and deniers of truth burning in hellfire. From these ayahs, we learn the following points. Number 1. It is not possible to properly understand the torments of the various parts of hell other than what God Almighty has revealed in the Noble Quran and what the Prophet and his infallible heirs have elaborated on divine command. And number 2, both body and soul will be resurrected on the Day of Judgment, which means the true believers shall fully enjoy and taste the bounties of paradise, while those cast in hell undergo punishments and tortures.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestine campus protests continue across the US and elsewhere in the world. Nearly 2,200 arrests have been made in the US so far. Yemeni armed forces announced a new round of operations against Israel and its allies in support of the Palestinian people. And Palestinian resistance fighters conduct new operations against Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. Thank you for joining us. The clampdown on pro-Palestine protesters at the US universities continues to make headlines. Students, however, are determined to express their resentment at the US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. At Portland State University, police forces arrested at least 12 people. The University of New York was also the scene of anti-genocide rallies. The police forces moved in.